Blog Talk Radio. Welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon, the podcast that loves you. I'm your hostess, your cruise director, your groove mistress, Madame Perry, but you can call me Jen, Jennifer, JP, Perry. I'm just happy to be here with you, having such fun again on the show. And by the way, folks, you know, you can listen to the show anytime. You can only hear it live once, where you can call in, like tonight, like if you're listening right now at 801 EST on March the 15th, the Ides of March, 2021. You can listen live and call in, but you can always download or listen to it later. A lot of people tell me they listen in their cars, they listen when they're running or doing housework, which is cool. But you can catch us too on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, everything. And please follow, if you would, and share the episodes with your friends. Because we've been having so much fun. You know, a couple of weeks ago we had the prolific writer, screenwriter, filmmaker, Tina McElroy Ansa was on. And my friend Kenya co-hosted. Tina's friend Wanda called in and said, Tina, be quiet, let somebody else talk. And science fiction and steampunk author Zigzag Claiborne messaged in, I love this. This is like listening to my aunties when I was a kid and they were playing cards. He goes, I'm feeling kind of homesick now. But that was a fun show. The next night we had, also that week, we had Dr. Sheena C. Howard. Dr. Howard's newest book is actually a compilation that she's edited and she's also contributed to, called Why Wakanda Matters, What Black Panther Reveals About Psychology, Identity, and Communication. And that is an excellent book. Also, Dr. Sheena Howard was the first black woman to receive the Eisner Award, which in the world of comics is pretty much like an Oscar, Tony. So that was fun. Also, we had Viv Boucherat with her book, Know You're Crazy. And she's an artist, singer, musician, a lot of fun. And then her husband came on, Chris White. You might know from the Zombies, original Zombie lineup, not with them now, except for on the 50th anniversary tour, and putting out a lot of work called The Chris White Experience, so a lot of new songs. And also, he wrote a lot for Arjun, a lot of songs that you know connected with them. Chris White wrote or co-wrote. And let's see, also if you love the Zombies, I have it on good authority from their manager that Colin Blunstone and Rod Argent will be here soon in Madame Perry Salon. So that's fun. Tonight's guest is just a delightful trip. He was on a few months ago, and we had so much fun. So I've got to bring this man back. He's a musician, music promoter, novelist, writer, screenwriter. And I could go on and talk to about him, but I'd rather talk to him. So I want to welcome Graham Slater. I want to welcome you back in the Genie Bottle.
Hi, Jennifer. Nice to be with you. Yeah, and all your listeners, certainly.
It is a delight to be with you. And I just wanted to be clear, you know, we've talked about, and a lot of my listeners like to watch British TV or foreign things, and you were telling me about a show that may be coming over here to the States, Their Terror. And I was
That's right, yeah. And it is a terror, but it isn't, if it makes sense. It's about two ships that go to the Arctic in the 1800s, and they get literally stuck in the ice. And one of the ships is called The Terror, which is a good title in a way, but it's 10 episodes, and I binge-watched it over the weekend. All 10 episodes over two nights.
Well, at the very end, as the voice that comes over was counting back from 10 for us, I was asking you, that's terror as in a horrifying, scary thing, not the terror, as in a little yappy dog that wants to sink its little pointed teeth into your ankles. Like, sure.
No, definitely not a little dog. I mean, it's quite gruesome in places. One of my daughters said, watch it, and she hasn't got to number 10 yet. She came around for dinner last night, and she's up to number 7, but I'd watch them all, and they are very, very good, very well filmed, well acted, well written. I mean, it's just something very unusual, you know, but it's a lot of ice in it, obviously, but it's very, very good. Very, very good indeed.
Well, let's talk about something else that's very good and entertaining. Your books. I've been writing up and posting things about having you on the show again, and I'm trying to keep up with books. How many books you have? 8, 9?
Well, it's 9, yeah. It's 8 novels and the write-on book. But I, with the lockdown over here in England, I struggled to write number 10, if you like. I really did struggle, and I've shelved that. But about 10 days ago, I woke up in the night and had that eureka moment. So I'm actually writing a sequel to I Will Survive, and I'm halfway through it, literally that quickly.
Are you serious? I Will Survive. You asked me to tell you what I thought about it when I was through. I don't think I told you, did I?
Oh, you didn't, no.
Well, for one thing, folks, if you read I Will Survive, if you've already read it, they're fast-paced. They are books for adults. Doesn't mean that
yes.
Porn, but they're books for adults. They are suspense. And... Yeah, it's fast. There's not a wasted word in there. It's fast, and so he doesn't like overtell you things like some people do. That gets annoying. I mean, it goes fast, but you got it. It's just like a roller coaster. You just got to stay in your seat.
That's very nice. But that is how I write, because I write scripts. You see, I try to be as visual as I can. But to go into pages and pages describing, I don't know, a room, a carpet, wallpaper, or anything really, I know a lot of people get put off by that. So when I started writing, my plan was, although it was very loose, the plan was to keep people reading it and keep the chapters short, and then hopefully then they're going to go on to the next chapter and not put the book down and think, well, I'm not going to read anymore, and they leave it on the shelf to gather dust.
Well, nobody's going to leave I Will Survive. I mean, it was great. So I'm trying to work my way through your other books, where it's not really work. It's just okay, am I ready for this one? Okay, because once you get in, it's just like a ride that you're on, and you got to stay till the end. You can't skip off because you got to know what happened. That's right. Yeah.
Well, and the reason I decided to write the sequel was so many people have said, well, what happens? Because when I wrote the last page, I actually was in tears myself. You know, I thought this is dreadful, and I had planned to leave it at that, but and several people at the BBC actually said, look, you've got to write the next one, and I thought, well, no, I don't know what to write. There is no way, it can't really go anywhere, but. Once I had that, as I say, that eureka moment, it just all came together. I mean, I've got a lot of gaps to still fill in, but all I will say is that Liam and Zita end up in London, and the provisional title is London's Calling, but my wife hates it, so it will not be that, but it's the title I'm working with.
Yeah, all you, and of course, we mentioned last time, you're a musician, and you've traveled a lot in your early career as a musician, the Cavern Club, pretty much everything the Beatles did, you know, your band did as well, and goes very popular. So all your thrilling books have song titles, like I Will Survive.
That's right. Well, as many as I can. I mean, I wrote a historical book called Hatred Is the Key, which was set when Britain was at war again with America, 1812 to 1814. And obviously back then I had no idea what songs were like or the titles, so I had to come up with a title that fitted the book. But all the others, yes, they are song titles, and the next one will be. But it won't be London's Calling, but I'll come up with a good title that makes it work, certainly.
Okay, so yeah, the others like Love Shack, Ticket to Ride, More Than a Woman.
Cowboys and Angels.
Cowboys and Angels, yeah. Just too big to cry, and we're going to be we're all going to be famous.
Yep, yep. And the chapters in there are all songs by two British girl bands. They're no longer around, and it does, you know, irk me a little bit, because the bands in there, Sugar Babes and Girls Aloud, of course, they're not around. So to me, it seems a little bit dated now, and I keep thinking, well, shall I retitle it, rewrite it? But, you know, I don't think it's a good idea. It's like songs. You shouldn't really go back to songs if they're written and you've recorded them. It's on to the next, you know, and I think it's a bit of a cop-out if you keep reworking old songs, unless, like Rod Argent and Colin Bluntstone, I mean, they will rework them, and probably, they do slightly different arrangements to their songs, because Colin, with respect, his voice has changed. He's a wonderful voice, but I doubt if he'll hit the notes that he used to hit. Say You Don't Mind, I mean, there's an incredibly high note at the end of that. I doubt if he would hit that now, but maybe he still can.
Well, yeah. Well, see, the last time I saw, I guess, was probably about 4 years ago. And yeah, but most singers have to, you know, pitch things. Like tomorrow night, I'm going to be watching a virtual concert of Todd Rundgren. And when I listened to his first CD, first album in the car, that's the young, that's the teen, practically teenage Todd voice.
Yeah.
As he gets older, it's deeper. Looking for girl bands. When Chris was on, he had heard on another show that he had listened to of mine, he had heard that my husband bought me a ukulele. And
oh, very popular instrument that is, on the cruises too, yeah.
Really? So he was.
Oh, yeah, they have ukulele groups, and some of the people who do the craft sessions take the ukulele on, and they'll take maybe 50 with them, and they'll sell them to the passengers, and they have a concert at the end of the cruise. Oh, yeah, very, very popular.
Oh, my gosh. Well, he said something about it. You know, I heard your husband bought you a ukulele, and then somehow that evolved into, oh, what if I have a ukulele Chris White tribute band? So, you know, I don't know. We could make that our girl. We could be the Pussycat Dolls of
Pussycat Ukulele Dolls.
Okay, and if you see Chris, tell him. So anyway, we were also going to talk tonight about writing, because I have so many people, and you know, my book is called Sell Your Books Today, because I was told it was, if you use a short, catchy action title, you know, people will understand it. But as a publicist, I always see writers, they know more than they know. They think they don't need an editor. They don't want any darlings killed in their book. And also, they don't realize that you start promoting way ahead of the publication. And so I was running holding a coaching group where I would teach people. And my book tells people how to promote and to start early. But there's so much more that people always ask me about with writing. I say, look, I'm not a writer. My writing is all nonfiction essays and copy for stuff. But it's not fiction. So one of the coolest things about you is that you not only teach, but you teach writing, Graham, on international cruise ships.
I know I do. And I'm just, one of my things tomorrow is a video, promo video of some of my talks. Yeah.
Oh, well, would you be able to send it to me?
Well, it's for the cruise lines, because they're having real problems at the moment. So I've now signed to an agency, and they want a showreel so that they can show me to the cruise lines and book me in once, and I say once, things settle down a bit and cruises start again.
Well, how does it look over there? Are people taking the vaccine and getting out more, or what?
No, it's I was out with my wife today in our town or city, and I would say that one in every five shops have closed and won't open again, and the only places open are coffee takeaway shops. The banks, because we had to go to the bank, they now close. Instead of being open until 4:30 or 5 o'clock, they're now closing at 2 o'clock, and they're not opening on a Saturday. It's like a ghost town, and And all cities are the same. And I've heard today we have a company over here that sell wonderful chocolates called Thornton's. They have 61 shops around the UK, and I've heard this afternoon that they're closing all of them. So, no, it's pretty bad. And, of course, the problem with vaccines at the moment, a lot of countries have stopped them because of people who've had the vaccine have now developed blood clots. So it's a crazy time. It's a crazy, crazy time. It's not good at all, and I fear so much for businesses. If I was in business now, I don't know what I'd do with myself, you know, because there is no immediate future. And midterm, long-term, who knows what's going to happen, you know? We don't know.
Exactly, we don't know. And so it's changing up the way people work. Some of us are still working because I can do my work from home.
Same here, yeah. I love it. It's easy.
Yeah, you can write from home. But on the other hand, though, people that get out to work and you, like we're talking about the cruise ships, you know, because you go on the international cruise ships or when you teach or when you go to book signings and stuff like that, you know, that certainly had a big change. And, you know, people want to get out. They want to get out and have fun again if they feel safe with the virus. So I just think that's such a dream job and so cool you do that you've done that. And every time I've seen pictures of you, I mean, it looks like such a fun event with people around you and signings and the books and so forth. But talk to – what do you think for – by the way, if authors are listening to this live tonight, if you have a question for Graham Slater, you can call 646-716-9922. That's 646-716-9922. If you're in the continental U.S., it's a toll-free call. And I know some people are out there listening. Oh, you can always message me on Facebook if you have a question and you can't get to a phone for whatever reason. I don't judge. So, you know, people get busy. You can ask a question. So when you talk to writers, when you give these classes, when you give classes, courses on creative writing on a cruise ship, what do you start with, or what is your, you know,
the last one I did, which was the Christmas before last, I did 8 talks, and I normally start off with you know, why are you here? Because being on a ship, a lot of people look at the agenda for the day or the diary or the calendar and think, yeah, we'll go along. And one gentleman I remember, I read a half a page from one of my books, and he... Oh, he freaked right out. Oh, this is not for me. Oh, I can't sit here and listen. I mean, it was a little bit heavy. It was from Too Big to Cry, where a young lady had fallen down the stairs. She was depressed and she'd cut her wrist. So it was a bit heavy, but not like Love Shack or I Will Survive. And he stormed out. But I normally say, look, you know, why are you here? And I talk about the big sellers and I try to get them involved. And I ask them who are the biggest sellers of all time. And also what their interests are. And I normally go around the room. It's very relaxed. I normally have maybe 30, 40 people, and the majority of those come to every talk. And as I say, I did 8 the Christmas before last. And then I go through things like the timeline and flashing out the characters and how I do it, because I can only talk from experience. I can't stand there and I've read something from a book and try to teach that. I tell them how I do it. And the penny normally drops. And I've had a few passengers over the last few years who've actually sent me books they've written. And they say, you've lit the fire for us, you know.
Wow.
So it's lovely.
That is. Well, that's got to be a good feeling.
Oh, it's great. I mean, unfortunately, one of them... I can't tell you the name, but it wasn't very good. I mean, like we talked when I first came on, we're talking about description, and so you had so much description, but nothing happened until 2/3 of the way through the book, and then it really kicked off. And so I said to her, look, you know, I like the way you write, but your book should start at the last third, and then you should virtually edit all that 2/3, because it just didn't. It didn't go anywhere, you know. It was just, I don't know, she probably just sat there typing away. I'll explain this, describe that. But it didn't go anywhere. It did absolutely nothing. And It was difficult for me telling her that, but I don't want to discourage people, because when I was songwriting, or when people came to me with songs, the easiest thing for me was to say, well, it's no good, you're no good. But the thing is, you never know what people are going to do in the future. And I give them as much guidance as I can without being hypercritical. Because, you know, if you destroy, and you, as you say, you write, you don't want to destroy people's dream, you know. And it, as some people will. They'll absolutely be scathing, you know, when they read or hear anything. They'll say, no, it's no good at all. You ought to pack it in. But everyone can do something, but it's finding that niche. And that is the key, I think, to writing.
Yeah, you're right. This will, yeah, you never know where things will go, what they'll learn, but something may snap, you know, something, a bell may ring, and things will change. And then, two, yeah, you're right. You don't want to discourage, because when you read about people like, and of course, this is music, you know, which is a field you definitely understand. You know, how many times do you hear about people like David Bowie or whoever, which I guess kept getting, you know, writing, trying to make a record and just dud after dud, getting nowhere, and then just keep on. Perseverance.
Well, that's right, and I think you've got to keep on. I mean, Elton John, I'm not name dropping, but Elton John back in the 60s, early 70s, he said you don't need to be the best in the world at anything you do, but if you keep on, A, you will improve, and other people that are good drop out of the radar, you know. So eventually you will come to the top, and then with a bit of luck and hard work, yeah, you can make it. And you know, I mean, you've got to write. When I'm songwriting, I've been maybe write a dozen songs, and there'd only be two good ones, and I had to be my own credit controller, or quality controller, sorry, I'm thinking of finance there, but my own quality controller. And you've got to be honest and true to yourself. So if you write songs or you write poems or anything else, you really will know if it's any good or not. You may not know how good it is, but you certainly will know if it is any good. You should, your gut should tell you that. And if you kid yourself, well, then, you know, you're never going to get anywhere. So you've got to be honest and say, look, this doesn't work. But what I would say, though, Jennifer, to any writers, do not destroy anything you write. I mean, you look at some of these old films, you see authors and they've got a typewriter and they ended up to their necks in rolled up paper that they ripped out in the machine and start again. But now with, you know, PCs and laptops, I save most things. But what I do, I don't discard it. I just put a line through it. And, you know, I line it through, even in the middle of a paragraph, I just line it through. And then when I go back to get my, what I call my second draft, I will look at what I've crossed out, and quite often there are the odd line or words that really work very well because you've progressed with the story. So you must not destroy anything.
So you've, in other words, what you've laid out initially, it may not be polished, needs a lot of work, but there is, you know, some truth and some depth to it and some.
Yeah, always,
emotion.
Always. There's always something there because, you see, my wife, I was writing, I wrote a chapter the other day, and I think it was Sunday before last, and my wife came in and she started reading. She's a perfectionist. She was a shorthand typist, you know, and she's great with grammar and punctuation. And she started looking and she read the first two lines and she laughed. I said, cool, you want to change this? I couldn't get her to understand that it was the very first draft. I'd literally typed it a few minutes earlier, and she said, oh, you know, you got that word's wrong, and this is wrong, and that's wrong, and we almost fell out. We didn't fall out, but we almost fell out because, you know, she was criticising, quite rightly in a way, as far as she was concerned, that it wasn't very good. I'd literally just typed it straight off, bum, 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 you know, and I went into the, I got my study and I went into the other room and I made a cup of tea and she said, oh, you're annoyed. I'm not going to comment anymore. And I said, you can comment, but let me get it to a state that it's worth commenting on.
Yeah. That's very good. And how long have you been married?
It could have killed me, really. I mean, if I'd have been a new writer, I probably would have given in.
Yeah. And so, I know. What about, do you still write music?
Not very often. I occasionally will come up. We've got a piano here, a lovely piano. It's her piano. But occasionally I will just sit down and I will come up with melody and things like that, but not songs anymore. I because it's so hard to get songs away and off the ground these days, and you've still got to record them. So by the time you go through that, I'd rather, being honest, sit down and write my books or work with artists that have finished their music, you know.
Because your books, and also after I asked this, I want to talk to you about your book Right On, and also about Tabitha. Once you get reading your books, I mean, once you get into them, like I said, it is, you're on the ride, and just the beautiful, beautiful imagery where you're just thinking, you know, you really don't see how things are going to work out, and you don't make it too easy where you go, oh, see, that wouldn't work, you know, because we thriller lovers, we don't like that. You know, we want it to be right to the bone, which is where you take it right to the bone before you slice it off, before you take off their leg or whatever. But once you get in, do you get to rolling with them, or do you get to a point where you just stop and go, I don't know what to do now, or do they just kind of like?
Characters, and I become all of them. I become all of them because they, bearing in mind, they have to speak, so you have to have dialogue. And I was told many years ago that unless you know your characters well, they will all speak in the same way. So what I do is once I've got my idea and I know I need four characters, let's say Liam Riley, you know, who's one of the protagonists in I Will Survive, I look and look and look until I see a picture or a photograph of my Liam Riley. I have to have him on the wall. And then when I get to Zita, who was an ex-Mossad operative, I've got to have her on the wall. So when I've got my half a dozen key characters, I print them up. My wife does this. She'll print them all out on a page, color preferably, and we write or type the names beneath each of them, and I put it on the wall in front of me so that when I'm doing my dialogue, I can actually see them, and I don't get mixed up then in the way that they speak. And sometimes I will choose a character who is an actor. I mean, one of my characters in another book, in Hatred, was, and I've forgotten his name, Ray Winston, who's, you probably know him, he's a real Cockney actor, and he was the governor of the prison, and I could see him and hear him talk, so I was able to then to write the dialogue with him coming alive. So, no, you've got to know your characters, because otherwise, and you've got to be in them. You know, if you've got two people in a scene, you've got to be both of them. And then you can write your dialogue. I say I've been working on the new one today, and there are about three pages of dialogue in a cafe, just bum, 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 bum. And you know the character. But unless you know your character before you start, i.e. with a backstory, where they were born, their likes, their dislikes, their abilities, their mental abilities, their state, mental state, bodily, have they got a limp? Have they got a you know, a finger missing? Are they deaf? Are they bald? All these sort of things. You need to know that, because once you've got your character tied down, you know, with a picture and also a description of what they've done, where they're going, then you know how they're going to react to most situations. So then I become those characters.
So I love the character Zita, and you know, so I think early on, and because of her, the time she spent in the, help me with this word again, Mossad?
Mossad, the M-O-S-S-A-D, the Israeli Special Forces, yeah.
And early on, when you know, wherever she is, anytime, she always makes a note of where the exits would be, or
always
could be.
Oh yeah, because of the fire. But she has to. I mean, it's you know, she is an assassin, and in the new one, I mean, I've got some. Well, she is wonderful in London. I mean, she is absolutely brilliant. I've written that now, and it's what she does. The other thing, of course, Liam was going to have a tattoo, and she said, don't have a tattoo because you can't hide it. You know, if you're being tortured or you're captured, you've got a tattoo. People will know that most, if you look at most police murders, TV films, they always say, well, what distinguishing marks? Oh, he's got a bird on his shoulder or a cross on his left leg or whatever. And so they're easily distinguishable. And she says, no, you don't have a tattoo because it keeps people guessing. You're less likely to be recognised. Not you will be recognised, but you can argue it, you know, and that's what people are taught. I don't do a lot of research to get her character to work and to go into detail of where she'd been and why and how she became that character.
So what picture did you have for Zita? Was it Lucy Lawless?
No, it was Charisse Theron. Have I got the name right? Charisse Theron, South African actress. She's in she was in Mad Max. She's been in lots of films. But she's quick, you know. You would know her. Charisse Theron. If you put that into your browser.
Oh, yes. I know exactly who you're talking about. Charisse Theron. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's her, you know. I mean, it's just her, you know. And Liam is an actor who was in an episode or a couple of episodes of a medical program we have over here called Casualty. He only had a small part for a few weeks, but he was my character, you know.
So, okay, good.
It's important you want to know what they look like. It's very important. Yeah. And as I did in a couple of chapters of Right On, I explained how Jenny was found, didn't I?
Yes, but tell us again.
Well, Jenny, I came up with an idea that she was her husband, again, had multiple sclerosis. Nobody knew, and he'd had a car accident. But he ran a fishing boat down here in Devon, and he couldn't take it out anymore. So she, Jenny, then decided that she would have to take all the exams and the training so she could actually take out the boat, the fishing boat. So I scoured magazines until I found a lady, and the one I came up with is a very diminutive actress called Felicity Kendall.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in The Good Life and things like that, a beautiful young lady, and you know a really tiny lady, you know, a slip of a girl, if you like, and she took over the ship. And so in the book I've got a picture of her, but I then had to work out how she would do it. And I go through the whole process in Write On, how I came up with the idea, and then I came up with the timeline. There is a picture of Felicity Kendall in there. And I just go through the process, backstory of her and her husband and the kids and the in-laws. I go through all those people, and I show people how you form the character. And I think I picked out two or three other characters in there, and I put photographs in of them as well to just give a feel. So to guide people through, before you start writing, if you start writing and you haven't got your characters and a basic plot, you'll never finish it. You know, I don't believe there's such a thing as writer's block. What I say is if people aren't able to continue, you're looking at a blank screen or a blank piece of paper, it's because you haven't really thought out your characters and the timeline. And if you haven't done that, then you really go nowhere. And it's self-defeating, really. So you need to set everything up before you physically start writing.
I see. Yeah, you mentioned Felicity Kendall. What is popular over here is Rosemary and Thyme.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I can see them now. Yeah, detectives, weren't they? That's right.
Yeah.
Well, she is my Jenny or Jennifer, and then I work the story through. But no, you need to know your characters. And I mean, I never write the whole book in my head before I start. I think if you do that, then it's not going to work because you've got to allow your brain to, what can I say, unravel or give you ideas, you know, because it's like a seed, and you've got to let things gestate, and you get little ideas all the time then, and you'll start to fill it in places, and you fill in the chapters and everything else. But it's not instant. I mean, some writers, like Ian Rankin, who writes Rebus, I mean, he often will lock himself away in his flat in Edinburgh. He'll fill up his freezer, fill up the fridge, fill up everything, and 3 months he'll write a book. I can't do that. I mean, my books generally take longer than that, although I think London's Calling is probably going to be the quickest one I've written, I would say, unless I hit a wall somewhere. But no, Ian Rankin, I mean, a lot of people will sit down, they start at 5, 6 in the morning, and they'll write 2,000 words, and on to the next, and on to the next. But again, I can't write like that. I do spend hours and hours and hours in my study writing. I might be in here all day, you know. My wife would bring me in a sandwich and a couple of cups of tea, and I keep working. Other days, I can't. So I can't force it, you know. It's silly trying to just to put words on a screen for the sake of it. A lot of people count words. If you're I've written 3,000 words today, but there may only be 100 that are any good. So why waste time typing and thinking the number of words you've written when really it's what I say quality in a way.
Yeah. That is an excellent point, because I do see that a lot of people. I wrote this many words, or this is what I'm going to write today. I'm going to get at least 1,000 in. So, yeah. I like your take on that. By the way, the website is GrahamSlater.com, GrahamSlater. That's that simple. GrahamSlater.com, and I want to talk about his book Write On, because whether you're going to write a novel, your story, your life, memoir, autobiography, family history, whatever, his book Write On will help you with that. And so, again, if you have any questions, you can send them in to me. And if you're listening somewhere else, like people do when they're running, driving, I will always share all of this information, the website, all the links to Graham Slater and his books on all of my social media, not only for Madame Perry Salon, but also Jennifer Perry. So I'll share that. And you know what? I've got a little message here to play, and be back in about 45 seconds. So you can probably get some water.
Okay, dokey.
Okay. All right, be right back.
I mean, the world has gone crazy, right? I mean, this whole pandemic, I don't even know if I'm coming or going anymore. You know what I mean? But the one thing during the pandemic that I found out, right, that was a good thing, was the Madame Perry Salon. I mean, this podcast, right? When you hear her laughing, all you want to do is laugh, right? When her dog's barking in the background and she's talking to the duck, she's going to an interview, and I'm like, this podcast is the best podcast I've ever heard before. You know what I mean?
Aw, that's a sweet thing to say.
Isn't it?
Do you recognize that voice?
No, I don't.
It's the comedian.
Go on.
Sebastian Maniscalco.
I don't know him. No, yeah. But I mean, he sounds great. I mean, really on the button, as they say, isn't he? You know, and he dragged me in. Actually, I thought he was actually there with you. You know,
I found this guy on Fiverr, and they could do all kinds. So he's done all these for me. He does all kind of voices. He did another one as Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal, Charles Barkley. He does these for people in different voices, so yeah, I'm just a faker. Anyway, okay, your book, Write On. Talk about the book and why you wrote it. Do people come up and just ask you so many questions? You're going, look, I got a book. You can just get the book.
Yeah, well, what happens is, I mean, I say to people, look, you know, they all come in with notebooks and pens and things, and I've been the other side of it, and the problem is, and it's like people who take, you know, videos of things at a live show, where they're videoing it, but they don't actually get the feel of the show because they're looking through their camera all the time or their phone, just watching that rather than the real show. So And what I say to them is, look, if you want to write notes down, you can. But obviously I'm on the ship, so you can always come and ask me or have a chat, a cup of tea somewhere up on deck or whatever. But people said, you know, you ought to write a book because you give us so much information. We can't take it all in. And I do get them involved. So it was year before last, people said, look, you've got to write it. So I asked a few friends for titles, and one friend, a guy I went to school with called Graham, who's no longer with us. He had prostate cancer, and he's, I say, no longer with us. But he came up with the title Right On. And, yeah, it's great. It sold really well. And on the ships, I normally sell out of those. And you see people walking around with it, you know, and asking me questions. How do you do? Why did you do that? it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I can't believe it. But, yeah, people wanted it. And I do courses over here, creative writing courses. So people generally will buy them as well when I do my classes here. So, yeah, it's great. But I was asked to write it. I didn't intend writing it, but... and it was relatively quick to put together, but I wanted it to help people. And what the feedback I've had, Jennifer, is people have said it actually tells you how to do it, whereas a lot of how-to writing books, creative writing books, and we've all bought them. I've got a shelf full of them here, and they all contradict each other. They say, you're not telling us, you're showing us how to do it. And, of course, that is a phrase in any writer should know, is you show, you don't tell. And then that's right. You just show them how to do it rather than you assume that people don't know anything. And if they do know bits, then they can flick through it and go on to the next part. But, you know, it's great. I love it. And it was well worth me doing. It took a bit of time and I had to put another novel backwards, but I didn't mind. It worked very well.
Where's the part? Have you ever had a part, or when people should recognize a part, where you should just stop? You're in the middle of the book or in the beginning or somewhere toward the, but it's just not going to work out. Does it happen to you?
Yeah.
And
I do, but remember I said it's good to partly plan things. But what I often end up with, or early days I end up with, I might have two or three chapters that are reasonably well finished, you know, but other chapters I might have just a line or a couple of lines. And that's when I do freak out a little bit, because I think I start working on that one line, which is a chapter, and I actually think I'm never going to be able to write it, because you compare what you've already written in the book and you think, how on earth am I going to get that one line to become a chapter worth reading and worth writing. But if you've planned it out in a timeline and you know where you are, you can go to other places within the book, or you can do some research. Spend time research. Don't waste the time. If you've set time aside to write and it isn't working for whatever reason, then look at research. And a little example. If I'm writing something, I mean, what I'm working on today, Zita is in London and she's going to go to a hotel and get changed and then go to a restaurant in disguise. Now, what I've got to do yet is work out which restaurant it's going to be and which hotel it's going to be. So if I was stuck today, I write, hotel in capitals, need to find out where this is. I type that in, physically type that in capitals, and then I put find restaurant nearby within 5 minutes walking. And I put all that in capitals, and then I'll highlight it with a color. So if I'm struggling or I'm thinking, well, I don't really want to sit down and spend all day writing, I will just scroll through the pages, and when I get to that section I've just described, I'll then start to look at a map of London, and then I'll look at restaurants, I'll look at the menu, I'll look at, the hotel, is it a 5-star? I need a 5-star because there's a Saudi prince staying there, so I need a 5-star. I also need a casino nearby. So all those things. So you can do all that research, and I guarantee by the time you've spent an hour researching, you'll be typing again. So I talk to myself within the book, as I'm writing it. I need more here. Change this word. That doesn't make any sense. This is rubbish. put it down, because then you can go back to it. If you just leave gaps, it means nothing. You've got to instruct yourself as to what you need to do. And research is a great way of looking at looking at information, and then that will help to guide your character through it. I mean, I Will Survive and London's Calling are all set, of course, in 2000, so it's 20 years ago. So I've really not had a lot of mobile phones in it. And you've got to research things that were correct at that time. Certain cars weren't even invented or made by then, and certain restaurants weren't even open at that time. So you've actually got to check back to make sure that the time you're writing it in, that those things existed. Did the buses go past that route at that time? When did they change the numbers of the buses? All this sort of thing. So you've got to get all that right.
All right. Yeah, I see. I'm just mesmerized by you and your skills and your techniques and your voodoo or whatever it is that you do that makes your books what they are. Because you don't want any accidental anachronisms.
Well, it's got to be right, isn't it? You know, I mean, if certain mobile phones, if you're going to use a mobile phone, then it's got to be one that was around at that time. And all sorts of things, certain food changes a lot, you know, in England. I mean, I remember in the 60s, there was only one place that we knew as a band that did chips with curry sauce on, and that was up near Manchester. Now it's very common, cheesy chips, little things like that, you know, they weren't around them. Certain perfumes weren't around, certain magazines weren't around. Certain drinks weren't around. So all those things, you've got to, if you're going to mention a watch, was that watch, in being in 2000? So you all those things. And the other thing I do is if I go anywhere and I will pick up a map of the town, the village, the city, and I'll use that map for my street names. And I'll also pick up a local free newspaper and look at what's around and then check back fish and chip shop. Was that fish and chip shop there in 2000? Did it exist? Was it something else then, you know? So all those things, you can get information everywhere, but it makes the book real. But when you're setting it in a time, i.e. 2000, Hatred is the Key, 1812, well, you had to be very careful there, you know, how they spoke but without overdoing it, you know? Because nobody wants to read sort of local dialect.
And you know, when you talked about, you know, what perfumes, what kind of phone, whatever, because, yeah, those are powerful. I'm sure everybody's got something they could say. When I smell this, if I smell this fragrance, it takes me back to a place.
That's correct. That's exactly right. And what was the top sort of perfume in 2000? And you can research that, and you can see until you right. That's a present, or that was the one that everyone wanted. Then that's what you mention, and it's real, and it's right. But you've got to get it right, and that's what I, as I say when I'm writing. If I say perfume, if I said that, and I'll put in capitals, check out a popular one or a cheap one. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To suit the character, buy them a present. They buy them a cheap perfume and they think, oh, God, you know, it only costs 50p or 50 cents, you know, bought it in the market or something. So you've got to think it all through, but that is linked then to your character. If your character is a cheapskate and won't spend money or never buy a present or take anyone out for dinner or anything else, then you buy them a sandwich, you give them a packet of crisps or tortillas or something or whatever you have over there. You know what I mean, don't you?
And I've seen the pictures and where you've written about where you go to different countries and do research.
You've got to.
England. Yeah. And so that way you know the feel. When I read your books, I think it was 2019 and 2020 maybe, or 2018, 2019, I got to accompany my husband to a big trade show for a broadcast and media things in Amsterdam, and they're 10 days. And so walking around, since they're working and I'm just goofing around going to museums, I could feel, you know, it's like you took me back there. I could feel the walk and the sea and the way the air felt.
Well, you've got to do it. I mean, when I wrote Love Shack, I mean, I was over there with Fats Domino, and that's when his guitarist died, bless him, for a heroin overdose in the hotel, and I dedicated Love Shack to him, Roy Montel. But the thing is, I went back there, although I'd spent time living there and played there in bands and things, I went back each season to get a feel of how Amsterdam was each season, how it changed, the shops that opened, the special Christmas, New Year, all those. It's all relevant to that book and to I Will Survive. So, you know, you've got to go there. And I stayed in a little hotel in the red light district, got up in the middle of the night. I remember walking out and it was snowing, and Amsterdam, and I don't remember the line exactly, but my character, I'll tell you what it is. Yeah, my character is a gentleman who, an elderly guy who's always wanted to go with a prostitute in the window. And it's snowing, and there's very few around, and the girls are all semi-naked throwing snowballs at each other. And my character, and it's just a guy walking down the street, no name, he walks towards the window but stops. And he turns and he grins, and as he's walking away, he looks at his footsteps in the snow, and he mutters to himself, "Maybe next time I'll make it to the window." Now, when you walk around Amsterdam and it's snowing, everything becomes beautiful, as it is in most places. So I had to see that, and then once I'd seen that, then I came up with the idea of my little old man, bless him, walking along, and the girls throwing snowballs, and their minders, and their pimp saying, "Look, you know, get back in. You're supposed to be working." So all that came because I walked at 2 or 3 in the morning along the single canal there in De Valen, which is the red light area. I walked that in the middle of the night, and then because the snow was, you know, touching my nose and everything else, it was cold. The windows were still, the girls were still there. Then I came up with that idea. And if I hadn't have walked there in the snow, I wouldn't have come up with that whole thing. That would not have existed, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that is so brilliant. So let's take a situation like that where, because I would go into places, you know, I would be alone and going around the city, going to a place to have, you know, coffee, have a cappuccino or some waffle or whatever, and different people come in and out. When you do that, when you walk in, and I imagine, you know, you get the feel of the clientele for that particular restaurant or cafe or whatever it is.
Yep.
Do you, while you're in there, do you ever, and I've read that playwright David Mamet does this, do you ever pick up any dialogue and use it?
Very seldom. Very seldom. And I say, I mean, I tried it once. I was on a bus. We have buses just running around the city here. And I was on there one day, and I was sat there on my own. I was in semi-writer mode. I was thinking in my notebook there, wanting to get out of my pocket. But I didn't want to do it in case people thought I was sort of spying on them or or whatever.
Yeah.
And what they were talking about was nothing, really. What are you having for tea tonight? Oh, Bert's gone to work, you know. And it just wouldn't work for me. But what I do when I go to a cafe, I always get my notebook out. I always carry a little tiny pocketbook, about 2 inches across, 3 inches across, and maybe 5 inches, and a pen. And I always carry one. And I would just watch what people are wearing and their mannerisms. And if they are talking, it's something that is of interest, then I may use it loosely. I mean, I've just written a tiny section in a little cafe in the East End of London, and the gentleman who runs this cafe is called George. Now, this is 2000, remember, and so there were a lot of cafes around then, but real London cafes, you know, pie and mash and eel pie and mash and goodness knows, jellied eels and things. And my guy, George, runs it with his wife. Now, he's overweight. He's only got a couple of teeth. But he still likes young girls. And Zita walks in, and she's been in once with Liam, and then she goes back on her own. And he's all over her, you know. Yeah, what would you like? Oh, I see you've come back. And his wife nudges him in the back with her elbow while she's making the toast and things. And she said, look, you're too old for that. You're kidding yourself, you know. And so that's the sort of thing that people would say.
Yeah, because you can see it. You can see it.
You can. Yeah. And he puts the tea down and he slops it. It goes in the saucer because he's shaking because she's so nice and he's getting as close to her as he can. And his wife's watching him over there. And, because, yeah. So, yeah, I get a lot of characters and clothes and mannerisms from sitting in cafes. I'll often, if I can, sit near the window and look out onto the street and watch people walking by, and I might sit there for a couple of hours, you know, just watching people. And it's really incredible how much information you can get just watching people. You know, lady with a dog, you know, she's got it in her pocket or it's in her handbag or but whatever. You know, you just see things all the time. You know, you get the homeless people, how they're dressed, where they live, their home is a cardboard box in a doorway. You know, all these little things set the scene, and I do try to imagine. I mean, I actually have been homeless for a while, living on the street, and I tell you what, the worst part is 5 or 6 in the morning when very few places, if any, apart from the 24-hour-a-day cafes, everything is shut, you know, and you know, the street, cleaning the streets and things like that, you've got to get up, and that those hours are the worst of the day, because once there's a lot of people, you can just disappear amongst them. But when you're actually trying to sleep and then you know that people are coming through and it's daylight, then you've got a problem. And it's pretty horrific, you know. I went to the Alcoholics Anonymous for Love Shack to a meeting just to get a feel of what it is like, because Liam was an alcoholic or is an alcoholic, you know. So You've got to do these things. You've really got to be part of it. On my next book, it's called Buskers, I will be out playing my piano accordion in the street.
Oh, okay.
Just to see what it's like to be a busker, because I don't think it's very good. I mean, it sounds romantic. it's called Street Life, but it sounds quite romantic, but actually it's not at all. And I will be out there playing my accordion. They'll probably take money off me rather than give me money.
They will take money off of you.
Yeah, give me your card, mate. You're so bad. You're going to have to pay me to listen.
That's what I say to friends of mine that have dancing clubs for money, and they'll go, "How you do?" I go, "Look, I'm not young like you. If I did that, they'd pay me to put it back on. They go, put it back,
yep,
and I
right.
go,
that's
no,
right. yeah.
pay me. No, pay me.
Yeah,
I'll
pay
put
me.
It back on."
Like that guy that did that little bit just now, the old dog barking there.
It's legit.
Yeah, I know. It's real. It's not taped. Yeah, so no, you've got to live your characters, and you've got to, you know, to make it real, you have to do the research, and people can tell. I mean, without being cruel, Lee Child, I know he's sort of retired now, and his brother's writing the Jack Reacher stories, but mm-hmm. I always read Lee Child's books. I love them, but I read one probably 3 books ago that was set in Hamburg, and I honestly believe that he didn't go there to research it. I may be totally wrong, but I don't believe he went there, and I could tell, you know.
Mm-hmm. How could you tell? Give me an example, please.
Well, it just didn't. It didn't. He didn't give any information. It was down in the docks. Near Landensbrücken, because I lived in Hamburg, as you know, in the 60s. So you know these things, and it just skitted over information that really would have written if you'd been there. I don't know if that makes sense, But if you'd been, you would want to write it. Let's put it like that. You know, you wouldn't just skip over it. But great books. I mean, fantastic. I mean, it's one of the most successful writers, I think, probably of all time. You know, the number of Jack Reacher books he's written, 22 or 23 books. But I just think, you know, I say I always read them. I review them. And that was one that I can't remember the title, but that was one that just didn't seem right to me, because most of the others are all set in the USA, aren't they? So, I know no different. I've never been. So to me, it works very well, and I can feel it, see it, and smell it. But that particular one, it just didn't sort of ring true to me. But it's only me personally. It's not a criticism. I'm not criticizing. I wouldn't criticize anyone. But I just didn't think it was right compared to his others. But that's only me, you know, my opinion, as I say.
This is like people who write about the South or put a Southerner. Now, I know I'm a Southerner with a Southern accent. I'm aware of that. But there are a lot of different Southern accents. And we don't all, you know, eat what people think we eat all the time. You know, like, but people tend to get stereotyped. And like I said, the accent that was used in the, by the actor, I can't remember his name, in the TV film about John Lennon's murder by Mark David Chapman. And Mark David Chapman grew up where I grew up. He and my brother were in scouts together. His dad worked with my dad. I can tell you right now, if Mark David Chapman had that kind of accent growing up in Gresham Park in Southeast Atlanta, he wouldn't have lived long enough to shoot anybody, okay?
There you are. Well, there you are, you see. So that's why you have to be very, very careful, isn't it? Now, in a book, you probably get away with it because you wouldn't over-egg. You wouldn't over-egg the accent, but you might put in the odd phrase that would be specific to an area so that someone like yourself, if it was set down there, you'd say he's got it right. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it's very, very difficult. I mean, Scottish accents. I remember watching the film Trainspotting, which is a very Scottish, very British film. And I started to read the book, and I only read the first page, and it was all written colloquially, you know, sort of with the way that way it sounded. But I always ask people on the ships, I say, you know, have you read Trains? No, couldn't read it. And they're Scottish people. And they say, no, I couldn't read it, couldn't really understand it. Because they all learn English in the way that we're talking. So to suddenly say, hi, okay, the new Jimmy, whilst they say it, you wouldn't write that in a book because you lose, not everyone will actually understand it. Even Scots people, they would read it as straight English. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, yes, it does.
So you know, you've got to think about these things. It's so easy to put in, you know, the accents and things like that, but it wears very thin if you do it all the way through. So you have odd little phrases that really set the scene, and you know that that person is from Atlanta. Yes. Rather than, I don't know, somewhere else.
Yeah, and we don't all say bless your heart. So sometimes it's an insult. But yeah, it's fun. Listen, this has been so much fun. You are so much fun. You're not only a prolific writer of great stories and creator of great characters, you are just absolutely fascinating to talk with. And again, it's Graham Slater, SCLATER.com, and you can go there. You can also see not only where you can order his books off of there, off of the website, you can see pictures, learn all kind of stuff. There's even a page where it says where you can see where he's going to be, where he's been, what radio shows, TV shows coming up. I don't see Madame Perry's Salon in there, but you do a
it
lot
is. I'll
of,
put it on. There, yeah, I'll have another look, but I'll put it on.
Oh, yes,
I know
yes,
I did,
you
but
did.
Maybe you know, the website. A little tip, I decided to have a website that I could actually do myself, you know, rather than because so many people have websites that are actually out of date, they're never up to date, you know. And I do sort of look after it myself. It's very simple, and I'm just looking here now as we're speaking.
It is there because you put the USA time and the UK time. Live interview with Madame Perry Salon, USA. Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah, there you are, you see. Yes, it is on there, young lady.
And I see, and you've got, yeah, the cities, Eastbourne, Malaga, Costa del Sol, USA. So, yeah, you get around. On the air, you get around.
I do lots of interviews. I mean, not as many this time because what's happened with lockdown, a lot of the presenters work from home, so they don't go into the studio. So they don't always get the messages, the books or the emails because, you know, you've got somebody who's dealing with it and they just don't move it on, you know, and that has been a problem, certainly in the lockdown. That's one of the things that has caused me certainly a lot of issues. Trying to sort things out, but hopefully it will get better, and we can go back to, as I say, some sort of normal. I flipping hope so.
Yeah, don't we? Graham, have you ever have you ever considered audiobooks?
When I did Ticket to Ride, I had a gentleman in America who really loved it, and he said to me, oh, can you record some chapters for me? So I recorded 6 chapters. And it took forever. I mean, forever. I mean, you know, you've got, I don't know, I Will Survive, probably about 80, 90,000 words. It's going to take me to do it ages. And to get someone to do it, it's very, very expensive.
Yeah.
You know, to get someone who's an actor who can voice the words and get the expression and everything. So it's something that I have thought about. And Ticket to Ride, I've got 6 chapters recorded with music at the beginning and end, and it's really, really good, but the time it took is a long time, you know. And again, going back without being silly, I'd rather do rather write than to really work on an audio book. But you never know. I mean, Cowboys and Angels, just changing the subject, has actually been translated into Swedish, and I'm hopeful that that's going to be coming out over there very soon. And what will be great is they've wrote a lot of the film noir things come from Sweden and Scandinavia, so Girl with a Dragon Tattoo and things like that. So I'm hoping that once it's translated into Swedish, it might do a full circle and end up back on British television. You know, as a filmed in Scandinavia. But audiobooks maybe for the future, but certainly limited time, you know. I mean, once I'm in the mood to write, I want to write, and I think if I had to take chunks of time out to record it or for someone else to do it, it's weighing everything up, you know. In fact, what I did yesterday, very quickly, I'd written a couple of phrases, a Dutch phrase and a German phrase, and some English words, and I clicked on the computer and it read it for me. it was like a robot, but it was great hearing it being read, you know.
So
just I think it was about 3 lines, but it was quite funny listening to it.
So yeah, so it's very robotic, like say.
Has the mission been completed? You know that I have the greatest enthusiasm for it.
That's it.
Something
That's
like
it.
That. From Hal from 2001. Yeah, Space Odyssey. Oh, well, listen.
I mean, it's a great idea, and I'd love to do it, but, you know, it's got to be right, and I don't know. You know, if I knew that I was going to get a lot of sales through it, then I would probably think about it, but it's the unknown, and I think weighing it all up, certainly for me at the moment, the time isn't right, but maybe it will in a year's time, you know?
Yeah. Just like with your characters, anything can happen. Graham Slater, I know I've kept you over time, and I apologize to your wife. Tell her I didn't mean to keep you over, but she knows you're fun, so thank you so much.
Yeah, she does, yeah. 53 years now, yeah.
Yeah, so
54, maybe 54 actually in May. I think it's 53 actually, but yeah.
Wow,
long time, isn't it?
Yeah. So, so tell her thanks from me and all of us for allowing us to have so much of your time, and just thanks for being here and all of you taught. And I will make sure that everybody is able to access your website, your books, learn more about writing from you, and also get into these books, folks. If you've read them, you know. If you haven't, you don't wait. Don't wait.
You don't know what you're missing.
Yeah, believe me.
Thank you very much, Jenny. Found, love to your husband and your little dogs there. They were pretty good tonight, weren't they?
Yes, they were. And listen, and I came from a rough town, okay, because my husband said, you've known murderers? Yes, I've known murderers that grew up with me. It was a nice little middle-class neighborhood. Yeah, we had some murderers. So, yeah, these books even were shocking to me. So thank you very much. Graham Slater, please come back and visit us again.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.